The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Cindy Fowler from the North Carolina Reading Service, previously known as the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from Dave's Garden e-newsletter, the Triangle Gardener magazine, and the Garden Smart e-newsletter. And if we have time, maybe from Louise Riot's Carrots Love Tomatoes and Roses Love Garlic. We'll start with Dave's Garden e-newsletter. Autumn is a second spring when every leaf is a flower. That was said by someone called Albert Camus. Saving seed to grow your own daylilies and Japanese irises by Audrey Stahlsmith. Are you tired of paying big bucks for new daylily and Japanese iris cultivars? Why not try and garden your own? Although we gardeners know that hybrid cultivars don't come true from seed, I must admit to still sowing daylily and Japanese iris anyway. Those plants generally produce blooms so showy it doesn't matter whether they resemble their parents or not. In addition to saving money, I enjoy the surprise element of not knowing what the flowers will turn out to be and can feel smug about owning cultivars that nobody else in the world has. Starting daylilies from seed. Actually, the species types of daylilies, such as lemon lily and ditch lily, should come true from seed, as should varieties, indicated by two lowercase names separated by VAR. However, any iris or lily with a capitalized cultivar name, such as the ubiquitous Stella di Oro, probably won't. Instead of planting the seeds from my own daylilies and irises, I often swap for other people's seeds instead, so I'll be sure to get something different than what I already have. Although I'm too lazy to make crosses myself, some daylily enthusiasts who do that are willing to trade extra seeds from their matings. I'm always happy to get those, since I figure the experts should know better than I which combinations are likely to turn out well. Even if you don't get around to hand-pollinating your daylilies, the bees will do that for you, though their crosses won't be as well thought out. You can find the resulting seeds in the chambered capsules at the tips of the stems, but don't expect all of your plants to produce them. Those pods will begin to split open when the seeds are ripe. They resemble shiny black berries, often slightly larger than 1/4 inch in length. As compared to iris seeds, daylily seeds resemble shiny black berries, often slightly larger than 1/4 inch in length. As compared to iris seeds, daylily seeds are very easy to start. In late winter or early spring, simply sow them in damp seed starting mix, covering them with about an 1/2/8 of an inch of that mix. If you keep them warm, some may germinate within 6 days. You should be patient, though, as others may take considerably longer. After you transplant those seedlings into a garden bed outdoors in early summer, you can expect them to flower the following year. If, like me, you often don't get around to setting them out until late summer, you may need to wait a couple of years to see blooms. The latest bunch I started mostly got thinned by our ducks when they were small. Of the three that survived, one was a plain yellow. Starting Japanese irises from seeds. For Japanese iris, I also swapped for seeds and even ordered some from a seller in Japan once. Although they form inside chambered capsules similar to those of daylilies, the iris seeds are medium to dark brown, flattish, and about 3/8 of an inch across, and can vary in shape from roughly round to triangular. They require outdoor treatment. Those of you that do winter sowing simply can plant them in one of your gallon jugs. I usually sow mine 1/4 inch deep in a planting pack in mid-February, Place that pack inside a transparent and lidded empty gallon ice cream box and shove that container under a table or on our porch. The seeds generally begin sprouting about 55 to 65 days after they were planted. Be warned, irises grown from seed will require a longer period to mature than daylilies do. I think mine took about 3 years to bloom. Perhaps that is why there don't seem to be as many enthusiasts crossing them. However, I consider them worth the wait. And now from the Garden Smart e-newsletter. 5 Must-Have Ornamental Grasses for Fall Gardens by Susan Martin. Workhorse perennials like ornamental grasses can go unnoticed in the landscape until they enter their prime season, when they transform into total show-offs. Some have showy plumes, while others dazzle with their fall colors. Many grasses are valued for their winter interest, and they provide shelter and food for wildlife, too. Here are 5 of the very best. As gardeners, it's easy to get distracted by all the colorful blooms at garden centers in spring. Surely, showy flowers are essential in the garden, but they need a background to shine against. Shrubs often play that supporting role, but consider ornamental grasses too. Grasses provide structure in the landscape and typically demand very little to thrive from year to year. In spring and summer, ornamental grasses provide a low-maintenance backdrop for annuals and perennials in the garden. As the flowers begin to fade late in the season, grasses step up their game and extend the show with their showy seed heads. Fall colors and graceful structure that often remains intact through the winter months. There's nothing quite like the sight of glistening frost clinging to their airy stems on a frigid winter morning. As much as we depend on ornamental grasses for visual interest in fall and winter, wildlife and birds also use them for shelter, warmth, and food during this time when those things are otherwise scarce. When spring comes, birds use the foliage to fortify their nests. There are hundreds of ornamental grasses to choose from, with a wide range of cultural needs, sizes, and colors. It's a good idea to examine your options before you buy. So let's start by looking at 5 different types of ornamental grasses to find one that might be perfect fit for your garden. 1. Prairie Winds Desert Plains Fountain Grass. Fountain grass is a classic fall-blooming ornamental grass. Gets its common name from its showy bottle brush shaped plumes, which emerge from the center of the foliage and arc outwards like a fountain. Desert Plains blooms in early fall with larger plumes than the species and develops appreciable red, orange, and gold fall color. Penistem grows best in full sun and average to rich soil that is well drained. You'll know it is too dry if the tips of the leaves turn brown. Height 3 to 4 feet, hardy in zones 5 to 9. Prairie Winds Cheyenne Sky Switchgrass. Native Panicum switchgrass is easy to grow in a wide range of climates, requiring only full sun to survive. It grows well in most soil types from sand to heavy clay and tolerates any amount of moisture. Cheyenne Sky is a shorter section that takes in deep red tones in summer, becoming nearly all red in fall. Airy purple seed panicles appear in late summer, height 3 feet. Korean Feather Reed Grass. Korean Feather Reed Grass is a rare shade-tolerant ornamental grass that offers some height for the back of the flower border. In its native habitat, it grows in moist, deciduous woodlands, but this grass will also grow in full sun if watered regularly. It forms an upright clump of green foliage that is topped with feather duster-shaped plumes beginning in late summer. Use this grass as a backdrop for flowering perennials and be sure to clip a few flower plumes for your fall bouquets. The height is 3 to 4 and 5 inches feet Hardy, zone 4 to 9. And Prairie Winds, Blue Paradise of Little Bluestem. Little Bluestem is a prolific native grass that can be found growing wild all across all North America except for Nevada and Oregon. Since the native species tends to become quite floppy in fall and has variable fall color, breeders have selected varieties with stronger stems and more intense fall color. One such selection is the new Blue Paradise. Its silvery blue foliage forms a strictly upright column that turns deep wine red in fall. Like most little blue stems, its flowers are insignificant, height 3 to 3.5 feet tall. And finally, Red October Blue, Big Blue Stem. Like Little Blue Stem, Big Blue Stem is a native grass once dominated tall grass prairies. It can be found growing in the wild all across North America, except in the westernmost states and provinces. Its substantial root system makes it tolerant of wind and drought, though ideally it prefers some moisture. Red October is a colorful selection that has deep green foliage with red highlights in spring and intense scarlet red fall color. Deep red seed heads appear well above the foliage in mid to late summer, height 5 to 6 feet. And from the Triangle Gardener magazine, we have a lot of garden events coming up. The Great American Garden Tour, October the 2nd, from 10:30 a.m. until 1 p.m. Bree Arthur will present a pictorial review of her book tour. At the Raleigh Garden Club, there is a fee and it's open to all at the NC State University Club in Raleigh. For more information, go to the website raleigh-garden-club.org. And a fall open house, October the 4th through the 5th, 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. A wide variety of hellebores, plus a great selection of other plants at Pine Knot Farms in Clarksville, Virginia. It's only 1 hour north of the Triangle. For more information, call 434-252-1990. 434-252-1990. Or go to their website, pineknotfarms.com. And another open house, October the 4th through the 6th, and see camellias in bloom, plus discounts at the Camellia Forest Nursery in Chapel Hill. For information, call 919-968-0504 or go to camforest.com. That number, the phone number again, is 919-968-0504. And a fall gardening symposium on October the 5th with guest speaker Bree Arthur on sustainable local food production. There is a fee and you need to pre-register. This happens at the Warren County Courthouse in Warrenton, North Carolina. Or go to the website warren.ces.ncsu.edu. And a fall plant sale, October the 5th, 8 a.m. to 12 noon. A plant sale in the morning, followed by a tour of the garden from 1 p.m. to 2 p.m. at the Paul J. Senior Botanical Garden, located at 215 South Main Street in Kernersville. You can go to their website, seniorbotanicalgarden.org. And another plant sale, October the 5th, from 8 a.m. to 12 noon. A large variety of plants, including natives, at bargain prices. It's hosted by the Davidson County Master Gardener Volunteer Association at the Lexington Farmers Market at the Depot in Lexington, North Carolina. For information, contact Frankie Mefford at 336-407-2853. 336-407-2853. And a Friends of the Arboretum annual plant distribution on October the 5th, 9 a.m. to 9:15 a.m. Each fall, we offer thousands of choice and rare plants to our members and give them away freely. We will be selling membership starting at 7:30 a.m. That happens at the J.C. Ralston Arboretum at NC State University in Raleigh. For more information, call 919-515-3132. 919-515-3132. Or go to jcra.ncsu.edu. And a walk to Paradise Garden, October the 6th at 3 p.m. This is a musical fundraiser performed by the Salem Community Orchestra with the music of Strauss, Joplin, and Vivaldi. Social at 3 p.m., concert 3:30 p.m. to 4:30 p.m. You can get tickets online or call 336-996-7888. 336-996-7888. That's Paul J. Senior Botanical Garden, 215 South Main Street in Kernersville. Now a book review, Smaller Plants for Smarter Gardens. The fall equinox will not instantly introduce sweater weather and coolness, but this gradual weather change offers a new beginning for avid gardeners. Some will use the 2 months before the first frost to produce a fall vegetable garden. Before early November, carrots, beets, turnips, kale, lettuce, spinach, garlic, and onions can replace the struggling tomatoes and peppers in your garden. Fall is also the best time to add new bushes, perennials, and trees to a yard. Fall planting allows the roots to establish during the damp, cooler months ahead. Another plus is good plants at lower prices are available at nursery sales now. This year, I plan to hit the sales searching for plants like those recommended in Gardener's Guide to Compact Plants by Jessica Walliser. Compact plants are usually smaller in height or in width or in both, but blooms remain the same size as larger relatives. To help those searching for a smaller type plant not mentioned in her book, Walliser explains how to recognize compact plants from language on plant tags. Descriptive phrases like container-friendly, low-growing, or small-statured, and botanical names containing terms like nana, minor, minima, or alpinus are clues to a reduced-sized plant. After presenting instructions for basic plant care, Walliser offers advice on how to use small plants in gardens. 10 design plants are shown for common areas such as entrances, patios, kitchen, and herb gardens. Plants are suggested to solve 8 problematic areas, including planting on slopes, in too much shade, or to hide an unsightly view. A photograph of each suggested plant provides an image of how the improved garden would appear. The most interesting portions of the book to me were those that introduced specific plants. 40 thin trees, diminutive bushes, and short perennials are introduced in the Plants for the Yard and Landscape section. Each plant's description includes a photograph and its care. The last chapter will satisfy vegetable gardeners searching for petite fruit and vegetable plants. 50 smaller versions of fruit trees, berry bushes, fruit vines, herbs, and vegetables are revealed alongside a photograph of each. These plants and seeds can be ordered from companies in the book's source list. If your older large plants are smothering parts of your garden, despite a heavy pruning each spring, consider moving on to using compact plants. Smaller bush roses, less enormous hydrangeas, and a bed now filled with diminutive azaleas have already made my garden more open, sunnier, and easier to manage. The resulting increased light on the patch in which I annually plant vegetables might actually produce future edible results. And this article was written by Christine Thompson, a Raleigh gardener obsessed with plants. She is also a volunteer at the J.C. Ralston Arboretum and fills her spare time reading books, especially volumes about vegetation. And now from Louise Riotte's Carrots Love Tomatoes and Roses Love Garlic. Companion planting with flowers and herbs. Columbines are strong growers themselves, but do not assist other plants and are often detrimental. They are heavy feeders, so if you want to grow them as ornamentals, give them plenty of compost and feed other plants grown in their vicinity equally well. They will grow well in combination with rhubarb if both are given plenty of well-rotted cow manure. Native Americans considered flowers of wild columbine a highly effective tranquilizer. Calliopsis. Coreopsis in the flower bed is useful as an insect control for nearby plants. It is also an attractive annual of the Compositae family, whose yellow, red, and maroon flowers grow on tall, slender stems. It looks like a daisy and may have one or two layers of petals. Cornflower. Cornflower in the proportion of 1 to 100 seeds is noted for its salubrious effect when grown with rye. Also called bachelor's button or blue bottle, it is also beneficial to other small grains if grown in about the same proportion. The flowers supply bees with abundant nectar even in the driest weather. It was a custom among Russian peasants to decorate the first sheaf of the rye harvest with a cornflower wreath, after which it was placed in front of an icon. Dandelion. Dandelions, even if they grow in thick patches on your lawn, are not competing with grasses because of their long, very deep tap roots. These transport minerals, especially calcium, upward from deeper soil layers, even from beneath hard pan, which they can penetrate, and deposit them near the surface. They are, therefore, returning to the soil minerals that have been lost through seeping downward. Dandelions are all closely associated with clover and alfalfa, which also prefer good, deep soils. Juliet D. Berkeley Levy states in her Herbal Handbook for Everyone, "This is one of the most esteemed plants of the herbalist. It is blood cleansing, blood tonic, lymph cleansing. Also has external uses for treatment of warts and hard pimples. A diet of greens improves the enamel of the teeth. Dandelion helps other flowers grow. It stimulates fruits to ripen faster. The roots, dried and ground, are sometimes used as a coffee substitute. In early spring, the unopened buds are delicious, cooked with leeks, lightly salted, seasoned with butter, salt, and pepper. The hearts may even be eaten raw if the leaves are tied together and the heart blanched. They are very rich in vitamin A. A pale yellow dye can be made from dandelion blossoms. A deeper yellow-brown color is obtained when the dye is made from the plant's roots. Dusty Miller. Plant this around prized flowers to repel rabbits and other animals. William J. Park, former president of Park Seeds, who gave me this suggestion, considered the variety Diamond to be the most effective and the prettiest. Elder. Elder is noted for repelling certain insects. An old method of trapping cutworms consisted of placing compact handfuls of elder sprouts in every fifth row or hill of cultivation and tamping them down. Cutworms gathered in this trap material where they could be regularly collected. Elder is a powerful patriarch of the plant world. Wherever it grows, it discourages other herbs. Animals usually dislike the rank elder taste. Elder leaves are effective against moles if placed in their runs. They find the odor offensive. Branches of elder have been used against maggots. Bruise them first to increase the odor. Then rake the leaves across the seed bed after sowing. All right, larkspur. Carmen larkspur's alkaloids, delcocin and delcelin, have been found effective against aphids and thrips. And Jimson weed. This weed spreads usually by having its seed carried by birds. It is very poisonous, causing a kind of intoxicated state, but has a certain medicinal value. It is helpful when grown with pumpkins. Lily of the Valley, this delightfully fragrant garden flower in Germany called the Mayflower flower, grows wild in southern Allegheny regions. It likes rich, humusy soil and partial shade. Do not put narcissus with it in a vase, as it will cause the narcissus to wither. Perhaps because the leaves and the flowers of the lily of the valley happen to be poisonous. Planting African marigolds a year before planting narcissus bulbs will defeat certain nematodes that often attack the bulbs. So before you plant your narcissus bulbs, if you plan on planting any narcissus bulbs, be sure to plant the African marigolds, Tegetus erecta. We've run out of time for today's episode of Out in the Garden. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you enjoyed it. I'm Cindy Fowler, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. You have been listening to the North Carolina Reading Service, previously known as the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. Thanks for listening.